Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and legendary radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the farewell Emperor Akihito. Now, you might wonder why we are at Health Matters or involved with the former emperor of Japan.
Is it because you're legendary? Maybe.
Yes, I'm traveling in rarefied circles these days due to my fame as a radio health evangelist. But beyond that, we ourselves have experienced an abdication. Our longest standing radio producer of Health Matters, Brian Courtney, has abdicated his throne. And so we thought it would be a good idea. First of all, I admire Akihito. He abdicated the throne so he could just retire, so he could spend some time, I don't know, whatever he does, golfing, writing poetry, things like that. He did that. And you contrast that with the British throne, where you've got Prince Charles, who is rapidly descending into old age with a 100-year-old mother who is still on the throne. And you think, well, you know, gee, I mean, wouldn't it be nice? I mean, these young people don't have a chance in the United Kingdom. Meanwhile, in Japan, apparently, they're much more sensible about things. I thought, so there's a lesson for all of us, and also just the parallel between our radio show and the fate of the country of Japan could not be more even tracks.
Are those two governments the same? Are you making a legit analogy there? Because it really feels like you just went for something that wasn't there.
Well, you could say that. You could say that. I think also, Rick,
I mean, because the English monarchs are. I mean, they're really more ceremonial.
Well, Hirohito.
I mean, he had to step down because he had a job to do.
Right. Well, Akihito, he got tired of doing his job. He just said, "I'm tired of being a royal person, practically a deity in Japan. I think I'll just let that thing go, and spend a little quality time with my family."
Yeah, but I mean, that's not quite the same as the English side of things, where they just their only job is to occupy a house.
Right. Yeah. Well. Okay. But I do believe, he abdicated too, and that's they had to actually change the laws in Japan to allow his son.
Can we do that for this show?
Well, I think we have.
This might be my last, Tony.
Yeah, now, stepping down. Before we do that, though, our listeners may be immediately impressed with the clarity of our thinking.
But don't
on this
worry,
show.
Your senses will come to you.
No, no. Now, you can tell there is a new breeze blowing in the studio here. No, wait, I'm wrong on that. But at any rate, the point is we have
top dog.
A producer who I think is finally at the level that this show deserves. That is none other than legendary radio producer Paul Hitchcock.
Well, it makes sense that we have a legendary show host.
Right. Now, here's my
and
concern.
A legendary producer.
Right, because right.
If only you had legendary co-hosts.
We are happy people. We enjoy putting this show on, and I know for a fact that Paul produces nothing but the blues.
You know what? I really think after long consideration, we should change our show name to that. Because that's what it feels like. Nothing but the blues.
Yeah,
pretty much nothing but the medical blues. Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio. And a special radio wave to the staff at the MSU Ronald G. Eaglin Space Science Center. Here to, as a matter of fact, already deeply involved in the production, the show from the University of Kentucky. Physician Assistant Program, Assistant Professor Shelley Irving. Hi, Shelley.
Hello.
And also, before he abdicates, Rick Phillips, the Executive Director of Networking and Infrastructure at UK, is going to tell you how to access Health Matters on the web.
You know you can get the audio of the show at WMKY.org. That's Morehead State Public Radio's website. Just take a look. Find the spots that's been quarantined for Health Matters. You'll find a list of all the shows. And in that list, there's a summary. But more importantly, there's a link to the audio. Click on that link, listen to the MP3, listen to the show over and over until you are so versed you can finish our sentences for you, right? That's what it's there for. Go ahead. We're not going to charge you. Use it as much as you want. After that, you're absolutely got to tell somebody something and you want to hear what they have to say about it, jump over on facebook.com/HM Radio Show, and there you'll find a fan page. Yep, that's right. It's a fan page that's devoted to health matters. You'll actually, you'll get to hear from us there. You can see things that we post. You can see some things that are on the show, some things that are just timely and in the news. Certainly, you can leave us some topics to talk about or give us some feedback. It's your way to interact with the show. So we encourage you to go over to Facebook, find the location, and then start interacting. And you can do that at facebook.com/HM Radio Show.
Our sponsor for today's show, breast cancer screening, 4 statements from the American College of Physicians. Now, the American College of Physicians is a group that I belong to. They are internal medicine and primary care physicians. There are family physicians who do primary care from cradle to grave. They take care of children, adults, senior citizens, and pregnant people, and so forth. The internal medicine group is more doctors for adults, so they are primary care doctors, the first person you call to get your medical care for adults. And this group has sifted through all the discordant, all the conflicting guidelines, looked at the evidence, and they have come up with 4 statements to guide our thinking on screening women for breast cancer with mammograms. Guidance statement number 1, in average risk women, age 40 to 49, clinicians should discuss whether to screen for breast cancer with mammograms before age 50. Discussion should include the benefits and harms and the woman's preferences. The harms, listen to this, the harms outweigh the benefits in most women in their 40s. Those harms, again, the benefits, it has never been shown to prolong life. The harms include extra mammograms, radiation, getting biopsies of things that you really don't need to biopsy, and possibly even getting treatments for something that really wouldn't turn out to be cancer if we had left it alone. And the benefits, you will see cancers or things that you think are cancer. You may remove some of them, but we cannot show that it prolongs your life. Guidance statement number 2, in average risk women, ages 50 to 74, the clinician should offer screening for breast cancer with mammography every 2 years. I'll say it again. Women ages 50 to 74 offer screening with mammography every 2 years. Turns out they have not shown an improvement over the every 2 years with annual mammography. Guidance statement number 3, in average risk women ages 75 years or older, or in women with a life expectancy of less than 10 years, we should discontinue screening for breast cancer. After age 75, or if you have an illness that is expected to result in your death within 10 years, we should stop screening. And I think the big thing is, if you are very ill and struggling with other diseases, it is time to stop screening for breast cancer. We're probably not going to be able to help you out. And then guidance statement number 4, in average risk women of all ages, clinicians should not use a clinical breast examination to screen for breast cancer. That is the palpation, the go in and have a person examine your breasts with their hands. Turns out not to offer any additional benefits. If a woman wants to examine her own breasts, she may be able to get familiar enough with them. She could tell a difference or a change. And certainly if you have something that you find that you think might be abnormal, that's a good time to do an exam. But just walking in, no abnormalities, no symptoms, and saying, would you, an expert, examine my breasts with your hands and see if you feel anything, that has not turned out to be of benefit at all. Those are those 4 guidelines from the American College of Physicians. We'll dissect them a little bit more in our second fractional portion, but I wanted to get our audience thinking about that right away. Emperor Akihito. As I said, I admire the man. This is a guy. His father was Hirohito, and he was emperor of Japan, obviously at the time of Pearl Harbor and World War II. And in 1946, he declared that he was a mortal, not a divine being. Rick has yet to declare that, and so this was a big step for Hirohito.
Okay. I'll get around to it.
Okay, well, just when you're ready, Rick.
Trust me. I have declared at times things. It's just not what you want.
Yeah, I know. So Rick does declare stuff, but he won't declare that. But at any rate, apparently Akihito talked to his father, Hirohito, about World War II and became very much a pacifist. This man realized that war really wrecks countries and wrecks people's lives and very seldom accomplishes anything meaningful. I mean, there are times when the world must be, we must go to war to rid the world of some great evil. But if you look around the globe right now, there are a lot of conflicts going on that seem to have no particular purpose other than imposing suffering on innocent people. And he realized that, and he was very much a pacifist, driving then Japan's post-war their rise in manufacturing and their peacefulness. Even though China has obviously had some, and I'm not a politician, but I know China has been some rumblings in the China Sea that Japan would have to keep an eye on. They have so far resisted rearming themselves, which brought him actually at odds with some of his government. Now I've got four similarities between Brian Courtney, who left our show, and Emperor Akihito, who abdicated his throne. Brian Courtney, born in 1998, expected to be the producer of Health Matters, and Health Matters effectively ended his career in radio journalism. Emperor Akihito, born in 1933, expected to grow to become the supreme commander of the nation's military. Japan's defeat in World War II transformed him into a pacifist. So you see the parallel lives. You see how these things are, in fact, coming together.
Clear as mud.
Okay.
See it, what?
In January 1946, his father, Emperor Hirohito, declared he was mortal, not a divine being. The Constitution took away the sovereignty from the emperor, gave it to the Japanese people, but the monarch was kept as a figurehead. But even now, people still welcome the Japanese emperor like a living god. Now, on May 8th, Brian declared he was through with Health Matters in a text message. I'll point out, did not, we knew.
He knows how to send text messages?
Yeah.
And somebody received it.
Yeah, Rick.
Did you respond to it?
Rick and I have had an ongoing battle. This is how we get distracted on the show. Because, see, I am here comparing Brian Courtney to Emperor Akihito. And Rick is still upset because I didn't answer his text message.
Twice this week.
And I think anyone would understand why that didn't happen. But now, even now, people still welcome Brian, and then are glad when he goes.
A good riddance to bad rubbish.
Right? Yep. Good riddance to bad rubbish. That is our...
He's done. He's gone. He's dead out. He's dead to me.
Okay. Emperor Akihito writes short poetry in the ancient Japanese waka form, a popular figure, comforting, praying for the victims of earthquakes. Both abroad at home express deep remorse for Japanese wartime actions. Brian Courtney, hobbies include fast food delivery and auto body work. A fixture at Health Matters, the longest tenured producer in our show's history.
Is that true?
Yes. I mean, we look back over the old shows, and it's hard to imagine, but he absolutely was.
I think you're making that up.
In modern times, more than 50 emperors, Japanese emperors, have abdicated, but this is the first time since the mid-1800s that a current and former emperor will be alive at the same time. And also in modern times, every producer of Health Matters has quit and left the radio station. Brian made his abdication by directly texting the Health Matters cast with an email canceling our last show.
But you know what, Tony? None of them have been fired.
No, they've all just quit. They've all just walked out. I think Paul knows enough not to fire them because he's going to have to replace them, and that's the hard part. Now, the question is, of course, are we bitter that Brian walked out on us? Well, I mean, of course not. We're bigger than that.
No.
Much bigger.
Yeah.
Much, much bigger.
But not at all. Nope.
So this is why we
I'm just
created
saying, Brian,
a show.
Who?
Yeah, I mean, I just got interested in Emperor Akihito and how he just walked out on his country, and I just thought
turned his back. You could say turned his
back
abandoned,
on his country,
abandoned
for his own selfish retirement, and you look at that. But again, certainly I can see the advantage of that over the British monarchy. But I don't want to get distracted with that because it's time to take a break. You're listening to Health Matters on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shell Irving.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the farewell Emperor Akihito. It is our salute to the Japanese emperor who abdicated his throne in order to retire, and also to our departing radio producer, Brian Courtney.
Didn't Eddie Murphy did that in one of the movies he was in, right? Didn't he give up his throne? You're not a movie guy, are you?
I'm not an Eddie Murphy guy. I'll tell you, outside of Beverly Hills Cop,
I think he was Coming to America.
Yeah, I think so. And I've never been able to sit through that movie. Just not my favorite stuff. Our sponsor for the second time, breast cancer screening, four statements from the American College of Physicians. And let's take a look at this now and make sure we understand. For women, statement number one: for women 40 to 49, clinicians should review the pros and cons of mammography and take into account a woman's preferences. And what this means is, how do you feel with uncertainty? Do you feel that you would rather know everything about your body, even if some of these things might lead you to have unnecessary tests? Or do you feel that you would rather, if there's nothing wrong, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, you would rather not to look? And that's the question that you ask. What is your approach? What has happened within your family? Did someone have some cancer that was diagnosed late and you feel like you need to stay on top of these things? Or did someone have a complication of unnecessary testing and you feel that unless someone makes you, you would rather not have that? Those are the type of things we ask. The American College of Physicians, reviewing all of the studies of mammography screening for breast cancer, feels that the harms outweigh the benefits. We cannot show that this will make you live longer. It might find breast cancer, but it will not. The lead time you get by finding it with a mammogram does not seem to be enough to make you live longer. The magnitude of reduction of breast cancer mortality associated with mammography is small and outweighed by other issues. Mammography not to reduce what they call all-cause mortality. Recommendation number two, for women ages 50 to 74, clinicians should offer every 2 year mammograms. Now, Shelley, I'll tell you, I talked with some docs at St. Clair, and one of the concerns they had is if you make something every 2 years, and we've seen this, I think, with colonoscopy, once it's more than once a year, it's really hard to keep track of where you are. That is, you know, you have to really have an extended calendar, write yourself notes to remind yourself when to get this. And one of the concerns is if we make it every 2 years, people may forget and may actually drop off.
And it's hard as a patient, too, to remember once you go past that 1 year mark.
Yeah, I think that's the problem I have with it. It makes sense. I mean, statistically, it makes sense, but it is really tough. And we saw that also with every 3 year pap smears, every 5 year HPV testing. We are moving to screening less frequently. Now, this is going to save money. It's going to save people a lot of trouble, but it does mean that you're going to have to keep track of when your next whatever is. Rather than just showing up every year and expecting to get it.
Well, and hopefully the electronic medical record will get to the point where it can keep track of that or send out a reminder automatically or somehow help us manage those as they get pushed further out.
Universally, it's not there yet.
No.
Do not rely on the computers to keep track of your schedule.
Nope.
Recommendation number three, women age 75 years or older, or those with a life expectancy 10 years or less, should discontinue screening. Now, there was a review in the Mayo Clinic proceedings about people who had lived to be 100. And the question is, what if you had a person where everyone in her family had reached at least age 95? You know, what would you do for that person as opposed to an average risk, average life expectancy person? Do we need to continue screening longer for certain families and certain people with certain expectations? One of the problems is with these recommendations is then that becomes the standard by which Medicare pays. And so Medicare will not pay after age 75 for routine breast cancer screening, so that gets a little dicey. And then number four, regardless of age, the clinical breast examination, where someone examines your breast manually with their hands, they look for lumps. If you do not have symptoms and you did not find a lump, that does not seem to help your health any at all, and that is no longer recommended. It's pretty much you do your exam. If you find something, we'll take a look at that. But if you don't find something, we do the x-ray and the x-ray only. We don't have anybody else trying to back up your exams and seeing if they find something where you didn't find them. That's our sponsor, breast cancer screening from the American College of Physicians. Now, I put this on the Facebook page. I think we ought to talk about it very briefly anyway because this is just too weird. May 1st, 2019. Well, I got this from Rolling Stone. And when I get my healthcare information from Rolling Stone, you know, it's
going to be a good show.
Two customers, spa, Albuquerque, New Mexico, infected. Well, they have tested positive for HIV. And this occurred after they got a vampire facial. What is a vampire facial, you might ask?
It's nothing that I would pay for, I don't think.
I don't even care to hear what it is.
Okay. This came from Kim Kardashian. Kim and Courtney Take Miami in 2013. You draw...
It's one of your favorite shows, isn't it, Tony?
The customer's butt. I have it on... I don't know what I have it on because I don't know what you put things on anymore. If I got it on DVD, if I got it on my TiVo, I don't think I have it on anything. But I could download it, no doubt. Anyway... You take the customer's blood. You run it through a centrifuge to seek out the platelet-rich plasma. Then you use microneedles to puncture the skin repeatedly in the face. And then you slather on their own plasma to soak into all those holes. It's like spreading frosting on a sheet cake, I guess. You puncture holes and then you spread on their plasma. Hopefully, it will be their plasma you're spreading on. And their plasma alone. Apparently not the case with the New Mexico spa. According to the vampire facial creator, Charles Runnels, MD, this spa, the VIP spa in Albuquerque, New Mexico, had never been licensed or trained to perform the vampire facial. And let's face it, if someone is going to take your blood and poke holes in your face and smear your blood on it, we want to make sure that those people are properly trained.
Yeah.
Where do you go for training for that exactly?
Well, Transylvania.
Do you think the NIH or something? I don't know. I would expect the Mayo Clinic. I don't know. At any rate, but somewhere they train it. But the big thing apparently is the New Mexico Department of Health offering free HIV and hepatitis B and C. Those are the two bloodborne types of hepatitis. Screenings to anyone who got the shots at the spa between May and September 2018 before it was shut down after a health inspection. Apparently, they were not exactly entirely clean and clear with their machine maintenance while they were slathering blood on people's faces.
Could you imagine getting that call? I need you to go inspect this facility.
Yeah, let me tell you what they do. And I want you to make sure they're doing a good job.
Where does the checklist come from for that?
Well, I suppose you start off with, well, all right, so just remind myself, what do we do with colonoscopes? You know, what do we, let's go talk to our labs and see how they handle their blood, although they don't usually smear it on people's faces.
No.
That's not a, nothing that, even on a bad day, that usually doesn't happen at St. Clair's lab.
Nope.
I suspect it doesn't happen in anybody's lab.
No, that's what you hope.
Yeah,
and this was deliberate, smearing blood on the face, and just for our radio fans, don't do that. This is a very stern warning from Health Matters. This is such a bad idea.
Yeah, it's pretty poor.
Now I will say we don't know that they got the HIV from the vampire facial. We can be worried about that. We can suspect that, but that you cannot prove that gave them the HIV, but.
It's still a bad idea.
It's still a bad idea. Don't smear your blood on your face, please. Let's think of a different way to rejuvenate your skin. That's our recommendation. Next up, we're going to talk about measles for a while, probably the rest of this segment, as a matter of fact. This is, I got to hear, as of May 10, 839 infections. We are headed for, I think, 900 and something in 1 year is the highest total in the past 25 years. And we are going to pass that easily. We're already at 850, and it's only May, so I don't think we'll have any problems at all picking up another 100 cases of measles, particularly since we've decided we're just going to let measles happen. 23 states have reported cases, no new states in the past week. 7 states have one or more measles outbreaks. That is New York, Michigan, New Jersey, California, Georgia, Maryland, and Pennsylvania. Fortunately, Kentucky, I think, is not on that list currently. Out of the 75 latest cases, 65 in New York because they're having an outbreak. And, again, we are approaching record levels of measles. So it is time for a Health Matters measles update. I didn't think we would have to do this. In fact, I did not have a single case of measles to study when I was in medical school because measles had been declared eliminated. We had gotten rid of it, so there was no point in learning measles. I did not. I think we had a talk about it just briefly. It's kind of a historical disease, but we did not talk about measles clinically because we would never see a case. And I didn't. I did not see a case of measles. I think I heard about one case in my first 20 years of practicing medicine. So this is a rare condition, but now it's no longer rare. First of all, historically, before the vaccination began in the United States in 1963, almost 500 people died each year from measles, 1,000 cases of encephalitis or inflammation of the brain, 48,000 hospitalizations, and our population was one-third the current size. So if we have measles outbreaks, a lot of people get sick, and people will die, 500 back in 1963. There are some people who are more susceptible. Children younger than 5 years of age, especially infants, adults over 20 years, have a tougher time with it. So teenagers are probably the most likely to bounce off a case of measles. Pregnant women and those who have severely compromised immune systems, cancer patients, leukemia patients, transplant patients, people who are on immunosuppressive drugs. Now, admittedly, I don't think we care a whole lot about pregnant women, infants, and people who have cancer and so forth. That those people are probably not important. But if we did assume those people were important, we might want to do something to try to prevent measles outbreaks.
I think they're important.
Because they're susceptible. I'm glad you do.
I do. I think they're important.
I'm surprised you don't think they're important.
Well, all I know is as a nation we've decided they're not important. Because we can prevent this disease. It's completely preventable.
Since when did you start conforming?
Well, I'm using, I call it sarcasm.
Sarcasm.
Really?
Sarcasm.
That's what that is?
Sarcasm. Yeah. Didn't and you,
like
you should have, with
that,
Paul Hitchcock
yeah, that
producing
was
the
good.
Show.
Nicely played. It. Very nicely played.
Listen, why don't you just do your
right
radio, you do your radio show over there. I'm doing my radio show over here. We'll just see who has the best radio show. How about that,
hey,
huh?
You can have the left ear. We'll take the right ear, and everything will be fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Guarantee you people will be laughing
you
on the right.
You see what I have to put up with. I mean, please, give generously to Boise State Public Radio.
You don't
what?
Have to put up with it.
Are you going to abdicate? Am I going to abdicate? I guess that's the question. Rick's bigger than me. If you want me to abdicate, Rick, I will abdicate. I think
well,
we have precedent
But that takes
now.
The fun out of it. You
can
abdicate all by yourself.
Yeah, I'll just send you a text. I'll let you know I'm not coming back. That's the way it works around here, apparently.
Oh, at least you'd send me a text.
Oh, I'm sorry, but we're...
Maybe.
I'll do anything to get a text.
Measles. A less effective vaccine from 1962 to 1967, and also there was only one shot given rather than two between 62 and 89. So the point is, if you were growing up in the 1960s and the 1970s, you may not be completely immune, even though you may have had a vaccination. Just to be aware, what we're doing now, particularly at really critical jobs like healthcare personnel, we're just saying, look, show us that your body is making proteins against the measles virus. If you do that, however you got that way, whether you got infected or vaccinated, we're fine. But if you cannot show us that, then we're going to vaccinate you. And they say, look, if there's any doubt, just vaccinate. Vaccinations are not the level of risk is not that high. And we need to make sure that, especially at that critical juncture where a person is taking care of other people who are sick, we need to make sure that those people are vaccinated. So I, as a healthcare provider, I have my measles titers checked. I was born in 1957, right at the cutoff point. Before 1957, everybody had pretty much got exposed. After 1957, we started vaccinating people. So I was checked. I have the antibodies. I did not have to get the vaccine. But it's important to know if you're in that position. For the rest of you, if you realize if you were born after 1957 and you did not have a vaccination or cannot demonstrate immunity, then in the case of an outbreak, you're going to get quarantined. You know, just that. Now, clinically, what happens? Well, after 8 to 12 days after you get exposed, you get a cough, you get inflammation of your nose, and you get irritation of your eyes. We call it the three C's, cough, coryza, and conjunctivitis. You can get some bluish-white places on a rib base on the back of your jaw. And then you develop the rash, raised red all over your body, head-to-toe pattern. Sometimes hard to recognize in people with dark skin. And your fever, typically 2 to 3 days after the rash starts, you get this high fever. You are contagious from the onset of the first feeling achy all the way to 48 hours after the rash appears. Now, one of the problems with measles is you really can't diagnose this in the lab. You have to look at the rash, talk to the patient, look at the circumstances, and that's how we're going to make our diagnosis. There are some lab tests. They take time to turn around, and they're not readily available because, again, we thought this disease was gone. And again, the best thing you can do is vaccinate so that we don't have to worry about the clinical cases. So that is your update on measles. Realize this is a rash characterized by the three C's: a cough, coryza, which means irritation, inflammation of the nose, and inflammation of your conjunctiva, conjunctivitis, followed in a few days by a red rash and a high fever. And it is highly contagious. If 10 people are exposed, 9 of them will get measles if they have not been vaccinated. So the key thing is to vaccinate. Interestingly enough, got this on May 8th. 77% of Americans say kids should get measles shots even if the parents object. That is, the vast majority, 80% of people in the United States, think that kids should be vaccinated. Absolutely. We don't need these outbreaks.
That's not enough, though. That's not enough people.
Well, but what I'm saying, though, is this was a poll. This was Reuters. It was a Reuters poll. And there was very little sympathy for the anti-vaccination. You get the idea that Americans are evenly split, but in fact, 77% say whether or not the parents want them vaccinated, these kids should be vaccinated because we've got to protect each other.
So this is an interesting topic because, you know, if there's a piece of land where we want to build a wonderful bridge or a street or a school or something that's detrimental to the success of society, we call that taking the land by eminent domain, right?
Right.
Are we talking about an eminent domain over a vaccination?
Yeah.
Is that what we're discussing?
Yeah, this is very similar. I mean, things like air quality and water quality, we can't just allow individuals to decide. I will protect the water
and I'll protect the air. Air quality and water quality are things to the environment. This is actually causing somebody to do something to their body. It's a little different.
I understand, but this is the government's purview, is to protect our population from things that might harm them. You should have confidence in health matters. Why don't you take a break and consider your response to our break? We'll be back with our third and final fractional portion if you decide to listen after the break.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is our farewell Emperor Akihito show. We are saluting Emperor Akihito of Japan, who has abdicated his throne so he can retire and so his son can take over at a reasonable age, as opposed to the British monarchy. We are also, I would hate to call it celebrating, but we are noting the passing... Commemorating the passing of Brian Courtney, our former radio show producer. Brian, a man who has eliminated more coughs and sneezes than Robitussin during the the 2-year reign as producer of our show. So farewell, Brian, wherever you are. We'll send you a text message of support, I'm sure.
One of us, anyway.
Let's not make the snippy comment. The point is, I have my phone on my desk, and Rick texted me more than once. I'll give him that. More than once today, and asking if we were doing the show tonight, and I didn't answer. I answered pretty much after he already was practically at the door.
I was like 20 miles from Moorhead.
I looked down at my phone, and that was the first time I saw his text message. Now, Rick, who, after all, is a director of networking and infrastructure, has very little tolerance for people who don't answer their text messages. And I understand that,
Rick. That could be accurate.
Yeah.
That could be accurate.
Very accurate. And Rick is bigger than me. And so Shelley is in between the two of us just to make sure that nothing happens here in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep.
Nothing's going to happen in the studio.
Tony.
All right. Our sponsor for the Final Time Breast Cancer Screening, four statements from the American College of Physicians. Again, this was after reviewing all the conflicting, all the difficult to discern guidelines regarding breast cancer screening. Many groups weighed in. Some of them said screen in the 40s. Some of them said screen every other year in the 40s. Some of them say discuss in the 40s and so forth. And so they tried to come up with what they thought was the most common sense based on the evidence guidelines. And these are, again, very simple. Ages 40 to 49, discuss whether to screen or not. Discussion should include potential benefits and harms in a woman's preferences. Potential harms outweigh the benefits in most women 40 to 49. Now, this is average risk. And average risk means that you do not carry one of the breast cancer genes and you do not have a first-degree relative, a sister or mother, who has breast cancer. And that's it. What if you have dense breasts? You are still average risk. That does not convey a higher risk, according to the folks at the American College of Physicians. So in the 40s, discuss, and if you have concerns about screening for cancer, if you want to screen for cancer, if you are at higher than average risk, then we may begin in the 40s. But for the average risk person, harms outweigh benefits, no benefit in life expectancy, and we should talk about it unless you want it. We're going to put it off. Guidance statement number two, ages 50 to 74, offer it. 50 to 74, that's where we have some evidence that it might lower your risk of dying. It might pick up a breast cancer early enough that something good could be done and that something would be worthwhile to you. But they recommend it every other year, every 2 years rather than every year. And that is a change you have to decide about. Guidance statement three, if you're 75 years or older, or if you have a chronic disease that will limit your life expectancy, please, they recommend discontinue screening for breast cancer. And I think certainly I've been focusing on people, my patients, who have these chronic illnesses. I think it is a terrible thing to put a person who has severe kidney disease, a person who has severe emphysema, to try to put them through screening tests, whether it's a mammogram for breast cancer, a test for colon cancer, and so forth. I think we have to have some common sense about what we're trying to do. If you are a healthy, vigorous person, and we are trying to get you to live as long as possible, cancer screening makes perfect sense. If you are a person who has a number of diseases, you have limitations, physical limitations, and these diseases are progressive, then for goodness sakes, you know, focus on the things that would make you happy and don't just get tests to get tests. And then guidance statement four, average risk women of all ages do not use clinical breast examination to screen for breast cancer. Sure, if you feel something abnormal in your breast, talk to your physician or your healthcare provider about it and seek a second opinion from them. But as far as going in, no symptoms, no problems, and saying, would you just check my breasts and see if you feel anything, that does not turn out to save lives. And so they've recommended not doing that. As our sponsor, Breast Cancer Screening. Those four statements at least should begin your discussion on screening for breast cancer. Now, I got excited about this. This has been something that has occupied my mind for quite a while. That's not that hard to do, I know. But still, this is something that I've been really interested in being here in Kentucky. This came from, there's a wire service I use called MedPage Today. Elizabeth Hlankova, I have no idea if I pronounced that right or not. She's a staff writer, May 14, 2019. And she was reporting on Christina Roberto of University of Pennsylvania and the article they published in the AMA Journal. They looked at the sugared beverages tax that Philadelphia imposed. They put a 1.5 cents per ounce tax on sugar-sweetened beverages. If you want to buy your Mountain Dew in Philadelphia, you're going to pay an extra 1.5 cents per ounce tax to the government. 24 ounces, you're talking about, hang on, let me get my shoes off, 36 cents.
Wow.
It's outrageous, isn't it, Rick?
It is.
Yeah, but they did it. They put a 1.5 cents per ounce tax on it, and they reduced their volume, their total volume of sugary drink sales by 1.3 billion with an illion ounces. That's a 51% reduction in their sales of sugar-sweetened beverages.
That is pretty amazing.
That is the by far and away the largest decrease we've seen. Many places have seen a 10% or a 12% reduction, but a 51% was amazing. Now, they did mention the volume of sales increased outside the city limits, and that dropped their 51% down by 24%, so it takes it down to basically a 27%.
That's still pretty good.
I think a 27%. I would take that. This is what Roberto, who's the lead author on this study, says, for decades, we've been waging this war against chronic diseases like diabetes and obesity, and public health experts have long argued for beverage taxes, but we really need to understand what the effect is. On any given day, half of Americans are drinking a sugary drink. And we know they have no nutritional value, and we know that they are linked to chronic diseases like diabetes. They provide you with sugar, but no sense of feeling full. I mean, one thing about it is if you eat a cupcake, at least you're going to feel full. You drink a beverage, that water just goes right through, the sugar gets absorbed, and your stomach's still empty.
You know one thing I've learned about that, Tony?
Tell me.
Is if you eat two cupcakes, you're more full.
Well, and I agree, but if you drink two beverages, your sugar levels are going high. But I will tell you, and I've told my patients this, if you were to get sweaty in the clinic and I was worried that your sugar was going to go low, I would give you a sugar sweetened beverages. Nothing makes your sugar skyrocket in a matter of minutes like a sugar sweetened beverages. We're going to give you orange juice. We're going to give you some type of a cola or something like that to get your sugar to go up rapidly. And then sweet tea is another one. I mean, there's so much sugar in that, they can't even do it at room temperature. They got to heat it up. Hey, think about what you're drinking. And then the other thing that they pointed out, we are not winning the war against diabetes. I mean, if there is a war, maybe the squabble. That's the latest word
squabbling against diabetes.
That was the latest Trumpism. Obviously, obesity rates are going higher and higher. What are we going to do? Are we going to yell more? Are we going to make people feel bad? Or are we going to try to find a way to change behaviors? And so for me, this kind of validates what we talked about. We desperately need this in Kentucky. We can help people not become obese, not develop these chronic illnesses. We can provide incentives for that, and also we'll get some tax revenue. So rather than getting more people hooked on gambling and lotteries, we can actually generate some money while we're improving their health. I think this is as win-win as you would ever see. The very people who need this the most are going to be the people who are most affected by it, so it's perfect. So just wanted to mention that. And obviously in this state, we have none of our gubernatorial candidates. As we record this, we're about to enter into our primaries. None of them have advocated any type of tax increase whatsoever. This is just, in this day and age, no taxes, even if that tax would benefit people's health. We're not going to do it. We're just going to.
But do we really think for a primary where you're trying to pick, you know, the best of three or the best of six, do you think any of them are really going to do something like suggest a tax hike?
No. I think they're, you know, again, in order to get elected, you can't do that, which is a shame because I think this is a very sensible thing to do. And might actually help us with some of the problems we face in Eastern Kentucky. I will tell you, as far as from a doctor's office, I am having zero effect on obesity rates in Moorhead and the surrounding environment. I can't tell. I've been here 30 years. I can't tell I've made the slightest bit of difference in the obesity rate.
Well, I would suggest there has been no progress, really. I mean, I know when I was a biomed first starting out, you know, seeing a bed that could handle 350, 400-pound person was uncommon. And then through the 90s and the 2000s, you started seeing a lot more beds that could go up to 500 pounds, 600 pounds. I mean, the beds keep getting bigger and bigger. I've yet to hear somebody say, oh, you know, we can probably go to a smaller bed now. Or, my gosh, these airplane seats are really big. You know,
yeah.
I don't believe that we're sizing down.
And you know, once again, we have the tools to better health, just like with vaccinations. We know how to accomplish these things. We know how to move this. Again, right here it is. We can cut our consumption of sugar-sweetened beverages. We know that, and we won't do it.
We could give an option and say you could run 5 miles or get a vaccination. Maybe then more people would get vaccinated. I wouldn't run 5 miles, would you?
Well, now there's a Shelley's, court case.
Shelley's looking at me like, you're an idiot.
Yeah. So, well, I mean,
you've done that to me a lot, Tony, but she's not done that to me much.
Well, I think everybody could
bring in their Mountain Dew and trade it for a vaccination.
It'd probably have to be a six pack.
I know you guys are.
A six pack.
I mean, if you're really going to negotiate here, you got to get a little.
That's true.
You know, I may just not bring any serious topics in here to this show anymore. It seems to me like if you
I'm sorry. This was a serious topic?
Trading a six-pack of Mountain Dews for a vaccination. What's your idea? My idea was a sugar-sweetened beverage tax. We don't put these things out on the market for the price we're currently paying for them because, obviously, we're not accounting for all the costs they generate by making people sick.
What about this, Tony? Right. What if we say you have to pay the tax if you're not vaccinated?
Oh, yeah.
And if you are vaccinated, you don't have to pay the sugar tax.
You get a little card so you get a discount
on your
Mountain
Dew. Right, you get a discount card. So I'm vaccinated, so I get the band card.
I like the band card,
but for vaccinations.
Yeah. I like that.
Huh. So, but, all right, keep in mind the research. All right, I'm taking you seriously, all right? So, okay, keep in mind the research says that the people who don't get the vaccine are the more educated and actually more wealthy people. They decide that they can pull their kids out of the community and that they'll be okay. They don't have to vaccinate their kids. And we've seen that here in Kentucky. You know, the kids that took the case to court were part of a private school rather than being public school kids.
But in the end, don't they end up being wrong? Because that's what allows it back in the country.
Right.
In the end, you're giving them credit when really they're not being the smartest about it.
I agree with that. My point is, though, they have enough money that they can buy the full price Mountain Dews. They don't have to take their little card in. The people that are going to take...
So you're just mad because you know, I see already, you're jealous.
The people that are going to take the card in are the people more likely to get the vaccination in the first place, which is the people that aren't quite as wealthy and don't live in gated communities and go to private schools. They will get the vaccine. They will have the card. Then they will get the Mountain Dews, and then they will get obese, and we're just perpetuating the current status quo. There. How about that? There's an argument.
But
man.
Right now, that's not the group of people that are obese and causing, you know, I mean.
No, I think it is exactly that group. I think those wealthy people that can afford to buy the drinks and don't need the vaccine card, those are the ones that are not getting the vaccine anyway.
Well, I'm just saying they're not the one, you know, never mind.
I know
not,
how
you're
could,
not,
how
you're not even to, worth
this
it anymore.
This was simple.
You're just not even worth it anymore.
This should have been simple. Where did we... All right, I got one more thing. Okay, do you think we can get through one more thing before we go to the
vote? Does it have a 36-cent tax on it?
No, this is something you should know. FDA, May 6th, a high systemic absorption of sunscreen ingredients. Now, the FDA got frustrated. They got frustrated with the sunscreen people. They called for a study. How much of this stuff do you actually get absorbed into your system rather than it staying on your skin? The makers of the sunscreens were very slow about doing this. So finally, the FDA, FDA research team, Murali Mata, they took it on themselves. 24 healthy volunteers, they put sunscreen on them. And they did it consistent with the current labeling, put it over their 75% of their body surface area 4 times a day, 4 days. They collected 30 blood samples over 7 days. And on day one after four applications, at the end of day one, 23 out of the 24 subjects had concentrations of the certain ingredients of the sunscreens greater than the threshold of toxicological concern, the TTC. Now, we don't know that those people did not have cancer. They did not die and their faces blow up or anything like that.
Yet.
But.
Wow.
I think we're just going to leave that little yet right in there.
Wow.
but no, I don't know what this means in sense of how has this affected their lives, how soon will they die or anything like that. Probably not. But the point is, these things do get absorbed. Rick, would you mind getting us off the air?
Special thanks, Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. As our former producer, Brian Courtney, looks for a new job, he will need introductions. We at Health Matters have prepared these introductions for Brian Courtney.
Look in the sky.
It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Brian Courtney.
Here's a story about a man named Brian who was busy raising three boys of his own.
A fiery horse with the speed of light, a cloud of dust, and a hearty hi-ho silver. It's Brian Courtney.
He's creepy and he's kooky, mysterious and spooky. He's altogether ooky. He's Brian Courtney.
He hunts the biggest of all game, public enemies that even the G-Men cannot reach. He's Brian Courtney.
Around Dodge City and in the territory out west, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of Brian Courtney.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? Brian Courtney knows.
Whatever you do, have sympathy for Brian. Hire him if he shows up at your door. Get out there and make a healthy change in your life. And tune in next week for more exciting news from the world of medical research on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Morehead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.